Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to take a look at Mercury's upcoming square to Neptune. Now, this is a particularly potent square because Mercury's square with Neptune is going to last quite a long time, and that's due to Mercury slowing down right now to station and turn retrograde. So this square will, you know, be around for about 2 to 3 weeks, really. You'll be feeling it. So we're going to take a look at that today. And before I do that, I want to remind everybody I'm in the midst of promoting my new program right now, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. It is a one-year course in ancient Hellenistic astrology. And it meets on Sundays starting in June. I'll take you to my website so you can see it. You can go to my courses page on nightlightastrology.com, click on the first year course, and you can learn all about it. It's about 100 hours worth of course content that I teach in live webinars. Of course, the webinars are recorded and archived for you in case you can't make the live class sessions. So you can participate from anywhere in the world, you know, regardless of what your time zone might be. Lots of people follow along remotely and study at their own pace from the recordings. Other people like to attend live. Either way, there are also breakout study and tutoring sessions. There's lots of bonus material, homework, guided reading. You can ask me questions anytime throughout the year as we're studying. We also have 12 guest lecturers who come out and give talks. And also at the toward the end of the class, we bring in live clients. You'll see me read for them. And then we have these breakdown sessions where we spend maybe an hour with a client and then hour to hour and a half breaking that reading down and helping everybody understand everything from craft points to counseling. One of the goals of this program is to really synthesize and blend some of the richness of ancient astrology, which very few people understand or have studied, and but marrying it together with modern archetypal or what's sometimes called psychological astrology. So that's kind of the goal of the course, because those are both forms that I love and appreciate. If you pay before the start of class, you can save $500 off with the early bird payment. You can use the payment plan if you need it, and there's also need-based tuition for people who might need a little help. We try to make the program really accessible. Hope to see some of you there in class. And again, any questions, feel free to email me info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, so let's take a look at this Mercury-Neptune square that's building. First of all, today you can see that the square is starting to be activated. Once Mercury gets to within about 3 degrees, you're going to start to really feel it. Here's Mercury at 18, 50 and change. So today we'll move into that 19th degree, start getting into that 3 degree range with Neptune at 22 Pisces. Now let's watch how this evolves over the upcoming days. Mercury's starting to slow down now. So it's not moving at quite the same pace that we're used to seeing Mercury moving at. You can see Mercury gets to the 22nd degree by Friday, and then very slowly on Saturday gets closer to that exact square and makes it by Sunday. So we're talking about this upcoming weekend. It might seem like it's a ways away, but the reason that it's important to start with this right now is because this is a developing story, as they say on the news, a developing story with Mercury and Neptune. So Mercury will square Neptune over the weekend, but then watch what happens when we get to the very end of the month. Mercury sits down at about 24 degrees. You can see this because, at least on my solar fire program here, there's a little S under Mercury. That means Mercury is stationing. Then Mercury gets red. Then it's turning retrograde. And this is by the very end of the month. As Mercury is turning retrograde, it's going to move back through the square with Neptune and hasn't left within 1 degree of the square with Neptune. So this is by next week. So we go on to watch how long it takes before. Now it's squaring it again by June 3rd. And it goes through that 23rd degree all the way until about June 5th and June 6th. So you're talking about between now and June 6th, it's really close to Neptune. And it'll stay within that 3 degree range all the way until about June 10th. Now, of course, when it eventually stations turns direct, it will go back through that square once more. So let's just give you a sense for when that's going to happen. That happens a little bit later. So you'll see Mercury coming back through the square with Neptune by about July 6th. Here we go. There's Mercury and Neptune. That's about July 6th. So this dynamic in total doesn't really clear until, you know, between right now, the middle of May and the early part of July. So it's a long-term transit. We need to have a good understanding of it. We'll probably revisit it several more times, but today we're just going to kind of break down some of the major things to watch for with this transit, which, as I said, again, we'll be perfecting for the first time this weekend. Okay. So one of the things that I like to do from time to time is I like to just dig up charts. There's a couple of good resources online where you can basically just dig up charts and find famous people, whether they're entertainers or historical figures, who were born with a particular aspect. And I find that in doing that, you'll often be able to very quickly identify some of the main archetypal characteristics of the planetary combination, and they can help to sort of exemplify what the transit's going to be about. So that's what we're going to do next. So, of course, not personally knowing any of these people, I have to say first that, you know, it's low-hanging fruit, right? We're just going to take a look at this list of people and how certain aspects of these individuals that are well-known in the public eye match with the archetypal characteristics of the planet. But this is not to pigeonhole these individuals. It's actually to just kind of pull something out and amplify it. And obviously, there's a lot of different sides to Mercury Neptune, and not everyone will carry every expression of a planetary combination. An individual's life or psychology or personality may be an expression of some of the qualities of a planetary combination, but not all of them. So first of all, Mercury, obviously god of mind, speech, communication, translation, a god that has a lot to do with markets and highways and places where information, money, ideas are being exchanged, even court games like basketball where things are going back and forth all the time. So I think that's really interesting. Now, if we take a look at this list, you're going to see that a lot of the people in the list are like singers, songwriters. Some of that has to do with just the database and how the database online is set up. It seems to, you know, gather a lot of like Hollywood or music industry celebrities into the search engine. But there are some examples of Mercury Neptune that aren't just about singer-songwriters. But that is one of the greatest expressions of Mercury Neptune is going to be. Here you have Neptune, on the other hand. I should have stopped and mentioned Neptune. Neptune, on the other hand, which represents things that are sublime and vast and transcendental and sort of mystical, elusive, subtle, intangible, ineffable, but also imaginative, sometimes conducive to drugs, addiction, escapism, deception, and like a veil or almost like a falseness that has to be seen through, disillusionment, ridding ourselves of fantasies that aren't healthy. Those are all things that can kind of come up with Neptune. I like to say that with Neptune, there's generally two ways that Neptune will go. One is it will create within us the yearning for something more than the mundane. And that can be a very good thing. On the other hand, it can create within us an almost intolerance for the mundane, or an intolerance for difference. It wants everything to be sort of seamlessly blended, mixed. It likes unity, but sometimes just really can't stand differences, or it'll be almost indifferent to people and their individual uniqueness. It likes to, Neptune, for example, is, you know, almost like losing your individuality, which could be nice, like in the state of trance or ecstasy, or, you know, maybe people are at a festival and they're dancing, you sort of lose yourself. But Neptune will also almost show indifference toward individuality in favor of collective meldedness or something like that. So at any rate, of course, Mercury Neptune is going to be associated with people who carry some of these mixed qualities together. So here's a good example. Elliot Smith. When I was a kid, I loved Elliot Smith music. I was a big fan. I think I've actually first heard him through the movie Good Will Hunting, and then I got really into him. He did some of the music for Good Will Hunting, I believe. So here's singer songwriter, beautiful, sort of tragic story. If you know of him, he died, I think, while trying to get sober from heroin, but he had a heroin addiction that was pretty serious. And he was also kind of incredible poet, singer, songwriter type with a very memorable and distinct sort of misty voice. So Elliot Smith plays that role of the kind of tragic singer-songwriter addict. You got a bunch of those. You've got Miles Davis, for example, otherworldly, mystical, psychedelic jazz, kind of bewitching quality to him. But of course, if you go on to his Wikipedia page, heroin habit, supported it by playing music and by living the life of a hustler, exploiting prostitutes, receiving money from friends. So he had, and if you ever watched the documentary that came out about him a little while ago, it was really interesting. But so he had this classic Mercury Neptune ability to like come up with all sorts of side hustles, and some of it's based on illusion or deception or secrecy, and in supporting a drug habit. But then he was also just this otherworldly, jazz blues virtuoso. I consider kind of a mix, but anyway. So, Miles Davis, another singer songwriter type with that, just that fluid, that kind of fluid, mercurial trickster singer songwriter bard, Bob Dylan. There's Bob Dylan. And people who know more about the life of Bob Dylan than I do might be able to say more about how you saw Mercury. If you guys know about Bob Dylan, how else did we see Mercury Neptune on display in his life? Jim Morrison, another singer songwriter type. There's others too that like Amy Winehouse is a classic example, someone with a really amazing voice, really talented musician, very mercurial personality, also struggled with alcoholism. Well, that was pretty severe. You have people who are like very far out and spacey, like David Bowie. David Bowie, obviously like a space oddity and just that kind of sci-fi, otherworldly glam rocker. I love his music, obviously, but he really exemplifies Mercury Neptune. He's very, like, if you think of the movie The Labyrinth that he was in, I don't know if you guys remember that movie, but it was one of my favorites when I was a kid. And, he played the Goblin King, and he, in the end of that, movie, he's in this castle where the stairs are twisting all around and you can't find your way, and he's kind of this elusive figure in the middle of a labyrinth. Very Mercury Neptune. You also have people like Jim Carrey, incredible comedian, obviously actor, who has this ability to really contort his body and expressions, and that ability to change. And also he like defined the comedic zeitgeist for a while. You'll often find that people with Mercury Neptune are able to tap into the collective mind and imagination, and they somehow represent it. I think David Bowie was similar. You have people who have, maybe cult-like personalities who are able to take in huge amounts of followers with a very compelling message. For example, David Koresh, who is a cult leader. Also, you have people who have a major, I didn't want to get into this so much, but there are people who obviously have major secret scandals associated with them. Jeffrey Epstein, Mercury Neptune, Donald Trump, Mercury Neptune. So you have like any time that like scandal, the media, disinformation, misinformation, lies, deception, illusion, sleight of hand, I'm doing this, but I'm telling you this, people who have the ability to shift and change very, very fluidly and almost maddeningly, for better or worse. One of the things that I think characterizes that shift, that ability to change views or change paradigms or change your mind about something, what might seem very dramatic to other people, how profoundly one's mind can change with a Mercury Neptune transit. It's as though there's a sea change in an intellectual or spiritual paradigm. Consider, for example, Cat Stevens, whose name is now, I looked it up. What was it? Yusuf Islam. I think that's his like initiated name. He became either like a Sufi or a Muslim. I can't remember. But one of the things that's so fascinating about him is that apparently he had like a near-death swimming incident, like in Malibu or something like that, where he almost died and he called out to God while in the waves. If you save me, like I'll dedicate my life to you. And then like a wave like brought him in toward the shore and he lived. And so that's exactly what he did. He made good on his promise. I always think that that's kind of amazing that he did that. And he gave up, secular music. I mean, I remember, T for the Tillerman, Teaser and the Firecat. There were these albums that he made that were just, when I grew up, like when I was playing, learning how to play guitar, like these were some of the first guitar songbooks that I ever got that my dad got for me. I remember hearing this story that he like almost got swallowed by a wave and then gave his life to God and to make music for God too. It was one of the revelations that he had. So this idea of almost Mercury Neptune as like baptism, rebirth, the skeptical mind or the questioning mind or the petitioning mind being overwhelmed by some act of mercy or grace or something miraculous kind of descending into the ordinary world. There's just that sort of sublime thing that can happen that can sort of totally shift a person's mind or worldview somehow. That's very Mercury Neptune. People like Lord Byron, who wrote the famous epic poem, Don Juan. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that was, obviously the Don Juan motif is really interesting about this guy who, falls in love with a lot of women. So, and you have other people who represent that, that quality of like sweet, soft, gentle, subtle seduction. Audrey Hepburn, for example, Mercury Neptune, and also Audrey Tautou. I don't know if you guys know her, but I think she was in the movie Amelie, if I'm remembering correctly. But both of them, that is the one. I'm 99% sure that's the one. But both of them have this kind of sweet, innocent, unassuming, almost secretive-like quality. It's very gentle and alluring. That's Mercury Neptune as well. How about another musician who had a major conversion experience, Shania Twain? She became a devotee of Sant Mat. I think that's how it's pronounced. And that's like a yoga. It's sort of like a yoga Sufism. It's very similar to Bhakti in some ways. So, giving her, she had this major, very much like Cat Stevens, a major kind of conversion experience. Of course, she's like also called the queen of country pop or something like that. I think one of the best-selling artists of all times anyway. And of course she had this kind of Eastern mystical conversion experience. Very fascinating. You also have people who deal with the feeling of being in writing or in art will deal with the topic, very Mercury Neptune topic, which is the need for the sublime. The sublime could be, going driving in the mountains to see some vast, quiet, empty wilderness landscape and to somehow be taken up to that 20,000 foot view. And the mind, it says though the mind needs to be kind of consumed and taken over by something really vast. So that's Jack London. Jack London, one of the things that, defined Jack London's writing was these vast wilderness landscapes that man had to like deal with in his soul, humankind, so to speak. So Jack London, a lover of the sublime, sometimes dealing with more tragic, heavy themes. You think of someone like Arthur Miller. Also, one of my favorites, singer-songwriters that I think really embodies the Mercury Neptune dynamic, at least when her album first came out, I think it was her first album came out. I think I was in like junior high or something like that, but it was Sarah McLachlan. And she had this just haunting, like beautiful voice, very otherworldly. And she was a part of a wave of, in my memory anyways, musicians where their voices were really distinct and sort of ethereal, and yet they were very popular on the radio. So anyway, just a simple example, but sometimes it's the quality of voice is sort of angelic and otherworldly in singer-songwriters. But all of these qualities doesn't have to be in music. It doesn't have to be, you know, in some great work of art. There can be very mundane, all of these things. Transporting of the mind to another dimension, sort of mystical, otherworldly, deceptive and elusive. It can also be about a great conversion or sort of miraculous eye-opening experiences, sea changes, paradigm shifts that are unexpected, and mercurial personalities that are shifty and soft and subtle and very alluring. I love the Audrey Hepburn and Audrey Tautou comparison that they both had Mercury-Neptune squares, because there's something about both of those women in particular to me that are so indicative of Mercury-Neptune, sort of elusive, secretive, shy, sensitive, subtle, but also like quirky and surprising and playful. So if you've never seen the movie Amelie, like Amelie is like a Mercury-Neptune movie. It's like through and through, it's like Mercury-Neptune. Joseph Campbell, that's the one I'll end with today. How about an exploration of like the mind exploring universal themes, archetypes, mythology, myth, metaphor, story, and being able to see in an almost mandala all of the themes of the world that are shared by different religions and cultures. And of course, one of the things that he's been accused of by scholars who don't like him, I happen to like him, but I understand where people are coming from who don't like him. They will tend to criticize him for being someone who wants to eliminate cultural, religious, historical diversities into universals. They'll say, oh, you know, you're trying to essentialize too much. There's that Mercury-Neptune tendency sometimes to want to essentialize everything, see the commonality, but almost be indifferent to particular differences. So these are all things, of course, to pay attention to. One of the things that you have to do when you're studying archetypes is in order to learn the language of archetypes, you have to learn how to see them. The transits are the best way to see them. With astrology anyway. And you can't see them. They're going to show up in ways that you don't always expect. So one of the best ways to prepare for them so that you can start to see them, when you start to see them, you have a relationship with them. When you have a relationship with them, everything in your life becomes more conscious. And more conscious means more happy, because more conscious means you're being yourself more. Like, you are a conscious being. When we live in unconsciousness, we're not in touch with ourselves. And so we're not in touch with the wellspring of actual joy and happiness. Studying the archetypes brings us into conscious awareness of the field of activities happening around us. So in order to become aware of the transits, you have to prime the pump by describing them in all different kinds of ways as they're starting to come into your field. Then you'll start to see them. You could also notice them in really simple things like, I poured water on a piece of, tech equipment or something. Like, Mercury Neptune can show up in the simplest of ways. For example, I think I told you guys that I'd been kind of dreading Mars in Cancer going around some of my planets in Cancer in my birth chart, because last time it happened, I got stung by hornets. Well, this past weekend, as Mars in Cancer was opposing my moon in Capricorn, I tripped and I was carrying an armful of dishes. I tripped and fell flat onto the floor and they all smashed. And I was like literally laying on the floor covered in like broken glass. So, and I was like, I was on the floor. My wife was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was just sitting there laughing, because I like, it really hurt my toe. Like, I dropped all the plates on my toe. And then I was laughing and I go, trying to make dinner in the home, I dropped glass and fell and dropped glass all over the floor, and I'm laying in a pile of broken glass with like an injured foot. And I'm in my head, I'm realizing all of this, and my wife is like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm laughing, and she's like, what? And I was like it came back. It's the hornets again, but this time I got some broken glass on a banged up foot. And my wife was like, you're so weird, you know. I was like, it's amazing. It's amazing. My foot's fine. Thank God it wasn't anything worse, but like, that's amazing. And I'm sitting in broken glass and I was wondering what was going to happen while Mars opposes my moon. So the thing about knowing that these transits are coming and knowing that we have it's being able to identify this web of archetypes that you may encounter in some way. I mean, maybe someone lies to you. That kind of sucks. Or maybe you don't see something clearly, or, you know, whatever, something might happen like that. Well, when that happens, you can be like, wow, there it is. There's Mercury Neptune. It's not nearly as threatening, and you can stay in love with the universe. You can stay in love with your experience, and you can stay conscious rather than, you know, if I didn't have this knowledge, I wouldn't be there laughing. It, like, this is divine Leela. And I still hurt my toe. I'm not going to say it didn't hurt, but like my immediate understanding of what was happening was so profound. So I don't know like a better tool for life than being able to identify the moving mandala of archetypes. And hopefully today kind of primed the Mercury Neptune pump and gets your imagination flowing with what these archetypes might bring. Now, all the way, remember, to the like early part of July, Mercury and Neptune will be interacting really intensely between now and like early part of June in particular, backs off a bit, then it comes back again toward the beginning of July. So yeah, I'd be really curious to hear your stories. Please leave them in the comments section below. Remember, my new class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, is starting up pretty soon in June. I'd love to see you there. Come study archetypes for a year. Change your life. Get a cosmic GPS programmed in your head. And you can learn how to see the world through the lens of astrology at a much deeper level. It's an amazing tool to have, whether you plan on practicing it for others or just using it for yourself. All right, well, I will see you guys for lots more content later on this week. Take care, everyone. Bye.